Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to the very first No Small Questions. I'm Grace Kelly Miller, and this week I'm with fellow cast members Daryl Bailey and Ben Galpin.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Lovely. It's like we've not got David here. It's like the kids without.
What can we get away with?
Thank you all for sending us your questions via our various social media platforms. We're very excited to answer them today. And what would a question show be without a question master? We have enlisted the help of Sam Oakes, a No Small Roles superfan. Now, if you've listened to No Small Recaps, you may well recognise his silky tones. But if you haven't, this is your first time you'll get to hear them. So welcome, Sam.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Because you're an actor.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's a joy to be here and be involved a little bit more with this podcast. Eventually, I'm going to be on the show. Believe it. Just wait for that moment. It's going to be very, very impressive.
Keep believing it.
Cannot wait.
But a little bit about me. Yes, I am the number one super fan of this show. I will be taking over. I use he, him pronouns. And like many of my fellow No Small Rollers, I am an actor and part-time illustrator.
Ooh.
But that's enough about me. This is a question and answer show. So I think the first question we need to ask is everybody ready?
Yes.
I'm not so excited.
As we ever will be.
Let's get this kickstarted. We have had quite a good, decent response from the listener base, from all the social media. So from Twitter, from Facebook,
Lovely.
From Instagram. And I think the best one, probably the most broad one to kick off with, is from Dungeon Master Dylan, who sent this in via Instagram. And the question is, what or who got you into D&D? So who wants to take this one first? Should we go around the circle? Grace, why don't you kick us off?
So I got into D&D via two very lovely friends of mine, Hannah and G. They are both DMs, and actually Hannah is probably a good contender for No Small Roles superfan, Sam.
I'm not hearing it. No.
You've got competition. You really have. I wait till you guys meet. Just wait. But they got me into D&D probably about 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. I was a bit like hesitant at first because I didn't really get it. But then once I started listening to a few podcasts, this is why I think podcasts are awesome and why I wanted to start a podcast in the first place. Mm-hmm. In particular, The Adventure Zone. I was just hooked. I just, the absolute like amazing possibility of D&D was just, it blew my mind. So I was just like, yep, this is my thing now. I do, but I still know nothing about D&D, even though I've been doing it for ages.
I mean, until that last bit, I would have said word for word exactly how I got into it as well, because the McElroys, I mean, they make such a good podcast, don't they? And it is so accessible.
Yeah, really good.
Much like this one.
Aww. Oh, thanks, Sam.
He knows where his bread is buttered. That check is in
the
mail.
How about you, Ben? Did you have a different journey or was it a similar kind of process for you?
Well, my D&D journey came about because of essentially people within No Small Roles. That's entirely how it happened. That it began at the first sort of indoctrination was at a party with various of the now No Small Roles cast.
Yes.
Where I got stuck in the kitchen with Daryl and Grace and David, I believe, chatting on about this weird fantasy thing involving dice and talking about all these podcasts, and I didn't have a clue what was going on, but I got strong-armed into going along to a session about 6 months later, I want to say.
Probably, yeah.
About 6 months later, spring last year in Chris's flat, I believe it was. And that was my first time rolling a D20 in anger. made a wood elf that day, who I still love to bits. And yeah, got into it from there. I think within about a week, I'd ordered the book, the Player's Handbook, off eBay.
Oh, wow.
And the obsession began.
So was it literally first episode for you? You were like, oh, well, I say first episode, first time playing the game, you were like, nah, this is a bit of me.
Yeah. I think it was right from the start. I remember thinking, like, when before I went there, I was like, oh, this feels like I'm going over there for I don't know how many hours I'm meant to be going over there for, and like, what is this thing? And I was like, it's gonna be really awkward, because if this is rubbish, like, this is gonna be really awkward, because I'm just gonna have to tell all my friends, be like, I'm either gonna have to lie and be like, oh yeah, this is really fun, and just sort of keep going to these sessions like once a month and just sort of hating it.
Yeah.
Or just being like, cool, actually I'm really busy now, so I can't play D&D, but no.
Oh no.
I was hooked from the start.
You are, like, seeing just like how quickly you got hooked was just
wow,
amazing.
It happened fast.
I mean, so
love at first
done.
Roll.
It's just the best game. And Daryl, we know that you are, if I'm a super fan of No Small Roles, you are the super fan of D&D in general. So what was that spark for you?
I think it was a mate just inviting me to play Dungeons and Dragons, and I've been wanting to play it for ages, not knowing who plays it. Not knowing how to approach anyone, like, how do I play? Because I've heard of it. I somehow heard of Critical Role and checked it out and thought, that's fun. They're role-playing and I know all these voice actors. But then, you know, out of the blue, one of my mates I was making films with just mentioned it while we were recording something. So, like, let's play some D&D. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, please. And we started a few sessions, and then, you know, schedule is the death of many a campaign when you're a grown-up. But the magic was there straight away. Like, we were just us lads around a table on a free weekend for hours just mucking about. Yeah. And it just fulfilled so many, like, I don't know, fantasy tropes for me, ticked so many boxes for me, and I was hooked. And I just, like, so I was always the one like, when we play next, even if it's 4 months away, let's keep the conversation going. I'm actually, it's been 2 years since my friend introduced me to D&D.
Wow.
The group has fallen apart and I am still trying to get them to play again. So I think it died a bit. They got reignited again, similar to Ben in that kitchen during that open bar Christmas Halloween-y party. Yeah.
Chris-ma-ween, I believe.
Chris-ma-ween. Yeah.
Chris-ma-ween.
And I can say it is pretty wonderful playing with that group. I've had a couple of chances to do it myself with a druid character that I created.
Yeah.
And the passion is definitely
welcomed
there.
Into the group. He is the only member of the group who has yet to work for Open Bar Theatre Company. So we let
this
an outsider true. In.
Yeah, like Robert in.
Yeah. I said yet to, you know, got to hope.
Oh, mate, you still have a chance.
It's always a chance.
I think that obsession I think that reads with everyone, because I was similar where, you know, to Ben, where it was like, oh, you know, okay, this is like uber geeky. I know I love my games. I know I love that kind of stuff, but D&D might be a little step too far. And the idea that you're playing it for like 4 or 5 hours, but when you get to the end of that, you're like, is it over? No, we want to see what happens next with this storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that first session that I did, like half the session was just on character creation, which, you know, when you're doing, you're like, okay, this is entertaining. But then we only like played the game, as it were, for like an hour, hour and a half or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like, that's not enough.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that actually conveniently leads us on to the next question, which is about character creation. So this is from, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Darkest Argentum via Twitter has asked the question, how did you end up playing the character you do?
Ooh, good question.
And then how did you settle on playing that character? Like, was it a group choice that everybody kind of, you know, we need a little bit of this and we need a little bit of that? Or was it like, no, I know that I want to play one of these, so I'm going to chat to David and make sure that I am playing an artificer, for example.
Such a good choice.
Who wants to kick off with that? How did you start playing these characters?
Well, seeing as you've mentioned Artificer, why don't we go with Ben?
Does someone else want to go first? Because I want to remind myself of some notes I made way at the start, because that might be useful in this answer.
Oh, interesting. So. Is this the storyline of how you began playing Orin?
I've got somewhere some notes, so...
Ooh. Okay, in which case we ended with Daryl last time, so let's have Daryl at the start of this question.
No, basically it was, I want to play this character, I want to have a chat to David about it. Previously, because in the parallel campaign, that I'm playing at the moment, I played a cleric. And, you know, it's very much support and buff. And I love that kind of play. But I wanted to, you know, get more into hands-on to the action, but still have a bit of flexibility. So that ended up bleeding into my choice. And in terms of character, like, what do you mean, class or what kind of person they are? Do you mean, is that the question?
I think this, how did you end up playing the character? I'm wondering whether that is like, do you approach it from... Do you think of the class first, and you're like, I really want to play that class, or do you think of the personality first, and then you think about, okay, well, what class works for that?
Okay.
Or was it like a round the table discussion of we need to cover these bases?
Oh, right, yeah. I did ask that question, actually, when it came to character creation. I did ask David, like, what does everyone, you know, you don't have to tell me, but what has everyone else chosen so we can have a balanced party? Because when I play D&D, I'm very much from a video game perspective. Do you know what I mean? Like, if everyone's good at hitting things, okay, I'll be the healer. Do you know what I mean? I like to be that person, but I wanted to be a bit selfish. But for me, character creation comes from a story. I work from the story backwards. So I had an idea of what kind of story I'd like Enkidu to be from or part of. And then I work backwards from there. And then whatever scenarios and things happen in that backstory end up shaping his character. I go from there. I didn't plan for what his personality would turn out to be. I was just gonna let that come out in his interactions with everyone else. But yeah, it comes from a story first, and then off into the wind.
Cool. Okay, Grace, take us away.
I think because we started this during lockdown, I was really missing acting. So I basically thought, what sort of part do I want to play? What do I fancy playing? What's going to contrast characters I'm playing in other campaigns? What's going to be fun? And I used to love doing like Jane Austen productions, like Sense and Sensibility and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
that
you
was
definitely
like,
get that.
So yeah, like my early acting career, I was doing, you know, like I was very often in a bonnet and I loved it. So I was just like, how do I kind of, how do I use that as a start for a character in D&D? I kind of started off with Lydia from Pride and Prejudice. That was kind of my starting point for Gwendolyn, and then kind of built it from there with just taking whatever I wanted to put in, really, and like, oh, this will be fun, and this and that. And then, so from there, I had to go, okay, so what type of person is she, and what actual like class can I fit to that? So I really loved the idea of a half-orc, because I was like, I want to cosplay as a half-orc. That'll be fun. Cool. I can probably do the makeup. I can get the teeth. I can get the ears. I was like, yeah, okay. And then I was really stuck at what class to go with. I really didn't know what was going to sort of... She was nearly a barbarian, because I thought, you know what? I'm just going to...
So original.
But then, yeah, I wasn't... She would have had to have gone a very different way with, like, her more noble upbringing. Like, it would have had to have been that she was really resistant to it the whole time, I think, personally. Or maybe not. Like, you know, like, plenty of nobles could be barbaric. I think that's quite a fun combination for a character to play. But yeah, Monk just seemed to have the right refinement to it that I thought, this is going to be really fun. And like, we're doing some fun things with it. She's not a traditional monk at all. But yeah, I'm really happy with how David's like helping me. So like, if you're listening to this, you've probably listened to the most recent episodes, I hope. But the homebrew
stop
that
listening
we've
now
gone
and go and listen to the most recent
spoilers,
episode.
Yeah.
Spoiler warning.
So far, no spoilers, but they might come at some point. So
we've homebrewed my subclass for my monk. So it's the Way of Decorum, which I basically said to David, can
so cool.
I have a monk class that is like a combination with finishing school? so that is what he has created for me, which is
like
amazing.
Love this.
That's
really
cool.
So I basically ended up with this character because I wanted to play her. I wanted to have all the elements that you can enjoy, and I wanted to put on a really extra posh voice, which I seem to be doing right now anyway. I think I'm melding into Gwendolyn. I just thought, yeah, I like to think about what voices I'm going to do, and extra posh seemed fun.
Oh, I love this. I can't wait to see you play her in No Small Movies as well. Which
add
is next
that
on
to
the card.
Massive list of extra content.
Oh yeah.
No Small Austin.
I love that. So it's, yeah, for you the class was pretty much the last thing that you decided on, and only with those variables that you were able to work out with David.
Yeah, like, it could have been anything.
That is so cool, because that is definitely something you can do. I mean, I love it when my players ask me questions that break the kind of the dynamics within the book, you know, make it more homebrew, and therefore, like, make it more fun and accessible for them.
Yeah.
Anyways, how about you, Ben? Did you find your notes?
Yeah, I did. So I found my notes that I was trying to... My initial notes that I made way back when we were first talking about the podcast, and there's, like, a whole mix of stuff of, like, how's the podcast going to work? And then there's, like, a character ideas thing with a whole load of bullet points. And so the top of the list was Artificer... But then there was also Warlock was in there as well, Enkidu. It was a cleric, sorcerer, bard, druid. I was obviously clearly really undecided, but like, you know, like most of the classes, but like there were specific like subclasses that I was kind of looking at like for each of them. And I think I had like for a while I was onto a bit of a thing about like a sailor. I was like, could there be some sort of sailing background?
Oh.
I think because I've been looking at the Ghosts of Saltmarsh book.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's some interesting stuff in there. Like, there's some interesting background. So I was thinking of like a storm sorcery sorcerer or like a wild magic sorcerer. So those were all kind of options. But I think I probably did the opposite to Grace. I think I landed on my class first, because the way that we created the characters, we had a group session, didn't we?
Yeah.
Where the six of us, five of us and David, all met up online. And because of lockdown.
So, I was like, where did you do this? Oh, right, okay.
Because that's all that we were allowed to do. And we had a bit of a kind of a group session where we all kind of laid out some initial kind of character thoughts, didn't we? Yeah. Just sort of vaguely and just
like
were all
bare
like
bones.
Very bare bones, yeah. Like long before anything had been sort of, but just to sort of check that, you know, we weren't all going to land on the same thing accidentally, I think.
We weren't all going to turn up as wood elves.
Yeah, we're all going to be wood elf rangers with an eight companion.
Sorry, in our other campaign, basically we ended up with like three wood elves. Four wood elves.
Well, yeah, I mean, four. I came in to play this session with you guys and I've described Dow's character.
That was hilarious. I kind of turned and went, oh, hello, is there a mirror there?
Yeah.
But it was quite clear like Sam had like designed this character with a lot of love and inspiration, like, you know, quite lovingly described, and I was like, well, we just look exactly alike.
we kind of talked about the idea of making ourselves twins, but I think the end I changed my character.
You became like a moon elf or something, didn't you?
Completely the opposite, which I actually enjoy. That's a good joke.
Like, so from that lesson we learned that
from
maybe
that lesson we learned a little discussion
we need to discuss.
is handy to make sure that everyone's not gonna just land on the same character. But I remember in that discussion, like, we all went round and we took it in turns to kind of like lay out our initial ideas, and I was like, I had set my heart on being an artificer.
Yeah.
And I was the last to say, and I was just sitting there kind of like crossing my fingers, like, well, everyone's like, oh, I'm thinking maybe bard or maybe barbarian, I'm not quite sure. And I was like, if anyone says artificer, I'm gonna log out of Zoom. I'm throwing my toys out the pram. I'm like, no,
because
I think by that point I had really kind of set my heart on being like, yeah, no, I want to do an artificer. And I hadn't quite figured out all the ins and outs of it at that point, but I had the kind of the class, and I was starting to kind of come up with a few kind of things. Again, going back to my notes, that there was kind of like two schools of thought. There was one that I was kind of going down like, oh, is he a detective? And I was kind of thinking Nick Valentine, Fallout 4 sort of style, slightly that sort of style of thing going on. Or the other thing was like going down an artificial route, maybe a kind of construct or something like that. Or kind of augmented sort of Alistair Mad-Eye Moody style thought.
Cool. Cool.
Is that the inspiration for the leg brace?
Partly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I can imagine Mad-Eye Moody having bees.
Yeah.
Little mechanical bees. I can imagine him with that.
Yeah, arcane bees. That would work for him.
Because the artificer is like, we were kind of talking about this off the podcast, which is that the kind of the generic classes that you're used to seeing in a D&D campaign, you normally have somebody like a, you know, barbarian or a fighter or a ranger propping up that physical damage. You've got your wizard and then a cleric. Whereas none of you guys are playing those parts, but, you know, the artificer is kind of a bridge between the wizard and the cleric.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you do still, with these characters, you have covered all of those bases. And then obviously Juna being the flower mad sorcerer.
I'm glad you noticed that.
I mean, that would definitely be a question in here, but I don't want to spoil. I don't really want to know
until
it comes out.
I don't think we know. None of us know. We don't know.
Flower check. What is a flower check? Like,
and she rolled, what, charisma for it?
Charisma plus proficiency?
Like, what?
Yeah.
Had you checked
with
charisma?
We'll find out eventually.
Yeah. It will all come out. But
I'm having fun puzzling over what it is.
Yeah.
Sam can ask Vicky about Juna next time. Let's talk about Ben.
That's good. Yeah.
Stop talking about Vicky. She's not even here.
God. Oh, God. Like, we just want Vicky so much. Oh, it's like all the people in the party are just like, I want to be near Juna.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone just loves Juna.
Get out of the way, Aaron. I can't see you, Juna.
It's like Chris is in the room.
She loves the attention. Oh, hello, boys. I love it.
Anytime she speaks to Jenny, it just makes my day.
Oh, yeah. Jenny Juna conversations are the best conversations.
Incredible.
But anyway, we're segueing. Because we were talking about, you know, how much you're enjoying playing an artificer. And actually, that does lead on to the next question, which is...
Did we finish Ben, though?
Oh, yeah. The sort of final thought, just to finish the thought on that, is that the kind of one of the things that appealed to me about Artificer, I think, for podcast was the fact that I could just see it working for like an audio format. Because the more I sort of read about it and I've never played in a game with an artificer, like, so I was kind of coming in a bit clueless on how it would all sort of fit together. But like the more I read about it and the more it sort of talked in the books about like using magic through mechanisms, essentially through machines, I just sort of thought, oh, that will work. That could work really, really well for a podcast where you're the descriptive sort of element of the magic. I could just see how that could function. So that's why I was very defensive of playing an artificer in that initial session.
Oh, good.
I got to say, it is really cool when you do things like, oh, I just, you know, I tweak my blowtorch a little bit and then the firebolt comes out. It's so cool.
So good.
It's like, it makes me sound clever and I don't have to be clever at all because none of it actually has to work. I don't
actually
have
imaginary.
To make the tools.
Gosh. I'm enjoying Arin so much. I actually haven't looked up the artificer like guide at all, just so I can hear what new things Ori can come up with in future episodes. So I don't want to be like, oh, at level 5 he gets that, eh? Can't wait for that. No,
also, there's a bit of homebrew, so there's some stuff that
it's great.
That isn't from the books.
Yeah, I think we all have a bit of that, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, gorgeous. Okay, well, moving on to the question I was about to ask.
Wait, one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
No, listen.
Yeah, that screwdriver from episode 7.
This next question is from, great name, Canna Banana Joe via Instagram. I hope I've said
that
right.
Canna Banana Joe. That is a good question.
Canna Banana Joe. I love it. Which is, what is your favourite class to play? I wonder if it's Artificer.
Bard. I love playing bards. That's the end of my answer.
Well, actually, what is it about the bard class that you enjoy playing?
I basically like being able to sit during the session and come up with stupid rhymes so that I can sing a little song at people. And that just brings me joy. I must say, though, I am loving playing a monk because I don't have to worry about magic at all, and that's great. So I am really enjoying that. But, like, yeah, I'm a big fan of playing bards, so I'm really enjoying Gaius, like, when I get to hear Chris is coming out with, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's really cool, that's fun. I like singing.
Yeah.
And also being the face of the party can be quite fun sometimes. You know, whatever you come up with has quite a high chance of having an effect on the person that you're talking to.
As a player, I definitely like getting into stupid situations, and I think bards kind of lend themselves to that quite often. So
yeah.
And how about you, Daryl? Have you got a favorite class to play?
Oh yeah, it's tough, but I think cleric. I think cleric is my favorite. I love magic. I hate the fiddliness of choosing spells every game day, not knowing what's going to be useful for this day. I don't know what's coming. But I like that unpredictability. And just, again, from a video gamer's background, I love receiving buffs or power-ups from, if you get a kind of cooperative element to, like, I've given you this plus thingy to your thingy. And all, like, you know, knowing that you're the last line of defense, like, oh, the cleric is down, there's the extra bit of tension, and, you know, healing people is good. But, yeah, it gets the heart racing. Yeah, I love clerics, and they're very versatile. They're very strong in this edition of D&D. They have access to a lot of stuff, especially with all the subclasses they've got, and they're still coming out for them. So I like the versatility.
Well, you'd be siding with Matthew Mercer of Critical Role there. You know, he would argue that cleric, you could have a whole party of clerics and just be able everything. To play the game.
Yeah,
yeah, you can. You'd be able to take on anything. Like, you'd be very hard to kill. High armor class. Low HP, but high armor class, and lots.
Heal yourself back.
Yeah, heal yourself, bring yourself back to life. Like,
a whole, like, bring yourself back to life, is
like,
that an
well, bring yourself back to life, but like, imagine like six clerics, a party of six clerics taking on like a campaign, like, you'd be very hard to kill. So, I mean,
maybe that's
DM would
everybody going around casting Toll the Dead all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Toll the Dead is so good, isn't
it? Toll the Dead, Beacon of Hope, you know, those are...
And we have no clerics. They sound so
no. I was close. I was going to be a cleric or a warlock of the sun, which is basically a cleric. So I was close.
Oh,
I was really tempted.
They're the ones that have the pool of D6s, aren't they? That you can just splash out to.
I've
thought about
up.
Playing one of those before
it's in,
as well.
Xanathar's,
It's in Xanathar's.
Yeah.
And how about you, Ben? Is it the one you're playing now?
It's the one I'm playing up now. I guess I'm trying to think. Because I've played a ranger, I've played a warlock, I've played, I'm currently playing a rogue in another game, and obviously playing an artificer as well. And I think, like, I do enjoy characters that have, like, I think there's a fairly crossover link that I enjoy characters like a little bit of magic, but not too much, magic. Like, it's definitely what I've, like, warlock, you get a bit of magic, but not too much magic. No. Ranger, again, you get some stuff, but you can still go in with your bow. Artificer, again, you get some cool spells, but you've also got your sort of inventions and your physical stuff. And like in the campaign that I'm playing a rogue, I've just started multi-classing into a little bit of bard as well, because I really enjoy playing a rogue, I have to say. Like, I love skill stuff. I think that's what I really enjoy. So I really like that about a rogue, how many skills they've got. And that's kind of artificer is in a similar kind of vein. It's not quite a skill monkey sort of esque, but you can kind of work your way around it. Instead, you've got like tool proficiencies all over the place. So I think I enjoy classes that kind of, I guess I kind of enjoy that out of combat stuff quite a lot, the classes that are heavy on that element. But right now, if I had to play a one shot tomorrow and just had to pick any one class, Artificer.
Nice. Great answer.
I'll write a one shot for
you. Yeah, if you want.
Perfect.
Oh, great answers. Bringing us a little bit more back to this podcast as well. This is a question from Hannity Therapist on Instagram, who's asked, are you very similar or very unlike your character? So which elements are most like you or not? And what was your process in making them? Let's start off with Daryl this time. Are you a warlock?
I am a warlock.
Real life warlock.
Edgy, pact. Broody warlock with a pact with somebody or somebodies in my head. Similar in some ways, like in terms of being very shrewd, always questioning, like, what is that? Don't like that thing. What's that thing over there? Asking loads of questions all the time. And like to be sure of everything before I act. I think, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
sure. Punch your ladies in the face, maybe?
Do I punch this old lady? Mate, I thought about punching that lady for so long. And then I thought, nah, it's not going to happen. No, don't do it. And I thought, oh, screw it. Let's spice the thing up. No.
I know, he thought about it for a long time in his head without sharing this information with anyone else in the party.
But usually he's quite careful, but he got really desperate. You know, spice things up, break character. No. Am I like
character.
Do not break character. No. He's a rare bit of desperation on Akidu's part when he was just like, we're not getting anywhere. Anyway, to answer the question, sort of. I worked backwards from myself when I came to creating Akidu. I'm like, oh, good. What can we think of background-wise that's similar? In kind of environment ways, sort of. How he dealt with it. Not quite. I kind of thought, what if I was in this situation and didn't have the things I grew up with? What would that look like?
How about you, Ben?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think there are crossovers. There are definite crossovers between Oren and myself. I think in terms of his background and all of that, I think that is very different from me. That's pushed away. I feel like some of his personality traits are definitely similar, I think. I feel like there is a little bit of crossover. But also, he's quite low charisma, which is interesting for me, and not what I usually play. Like, I do enjoy playing, like, Warlock and stuff like that, where you can just be, as we were saying earlier, like, be the face of the party a bit more and be, just get in there with that conversation and, try and all of that. And it's interesting playing a character that is not like that at all and is, like, actively quite bad in social situations on a lot of occasions, which I'm sure I can be too. But I guess the sort of the similarity, kind of the main similarity with me is I've got a bit of a background in science, which bleeds in, I guess, because I did a chemistry degree before becoming a actor / professional podcaster. Are you going with that?
Yeah,
I'll definitely go with that.
But yes, I did a chemistry degree before going into whatever my career now is. And I'm not leaning into that so much with Orin in terms of, like, I did think about alchemy as an option for him. You know, that was a definite option. And I think he is going to dabble in that side of things, that, you know, a little bit. He's proficient in alchemy, so he can dabble.
Nice.
But I guess that side appealed and is a definite part of my personality bleeding in.
Oh, cool. And, well, Grace, I think we maybe kind of, you know, it was a part that you wanted to play, but how much of Gwendolyn is you,
yeah,
in essence?
I mean, I think, like, the same with the boys, like, there's elements, like, I think I've kind of looked back at younger Grace, who was super, super naive. I mean, I've still got a naive quality to me, but I think on the whole, I'm not as naive as I was when I was 20, which was a very long time ago.
Last year.
So, like, kind of, like, taking parts of my past and going, okay, like, that would be interesting to play with that now. But no, I didn't grow up in a noble household, so that's not very similar. but I kind of, like, I thought, oh, I'll stick a bit of sibling rivalry, even though me and my sister don't, like, we fought like cats and dogs, like, growing up, but now we get on really well. But I was like, okay, that's an element I want to have in her backstory, this kind of sister rivalry thing going on, which has been hinted at so far, but, like, not fully explored. But a lot of it was just, like, what I love about D&D is that you can be someone that you're not, and you can explore different parts of yourself or different potential parts of yourself within the constructs of a fun game and go, oh, I wonder if I was a bit more like that, would that be fun? And then you can roleplay it. And that's kind of cool. I it's making me really want to take up martial arts. I need to go to Daryl and, like, get some lessons.
Oh, we can,
like,
do it.
I want to learn how to, like, kick and punch things and stuff. Like, I think I did karate when I was in, like, year 6 and I wasn't very good. But now I'm just like, fuck it.
Yeah,
I can do whatever I want. Why not? So I think I'm seeing parts of her that I'm like, oh, maybe that would be fun to try. So I haven't really answered that question properly, but that's my answer.
No, I like that answer. I'm a little bit scared for your sister now, though.
I know. The advantage you'll have over her now. Like, I know what a roundhouse is. Na 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 na. Bang.
Watch me backflip into a tree.
I mean, yeah, when I can actually do that in real life, that'd be well a cool.
I'm looking forward to that. This time next year, right? We'll do it.
I have a small rolls picnic call, and I'll be in the tree. Yeah. Great. Throwing pears everywhere.
So at your did you just mention a No Small Rolls picnic?
I mean, maybe when we're allowed to see each other again. Yeah.
When that's not illegal anymore.
Well, it won't kill us.
It's interesting because Hannah's question goes on to ask, it's a D&D dinner party or picnic in this instance. So if you were at one of these dinner parties, which legends of lore do you invite to hang out for an evening? So for example, she's put in Mordenkainen, Xanathar, an owlbear.
An owlbear.
An owlbear.
She says normal folks.
Yeah. Classic owlbear, just an owlbear at a
from
picnic.
From D&D lore.
Yeah, so this could be like gods, it could be patrons. From your understanding of D&D so far.
Wow.
That's hard, man.
That is hard.
Because I've ignored most of the lore because everything I've played is homebrew.
I mean, it could be from your campaign as well. You know, if there were certain people that you in real life would love at a dinner party. Like Crow could be there bringing the chicken back to life.
No.
He'd bring the food back to life. Goodness me. You're horrible.
Yeah, do you want me to fix that sausage roll?
It's broken. It's broken. Its head's cut off and it's... and it's cooked, just bring it back. Like, no.
You know, do you remember those like singing fishes that you used to have on their wall?
Billy Bass.
Like,
Billy
I can
Bass.
Imagine like there being like a salmon on the table and then Crowl just brings it back to life and it starts singing at us. Some weird mystical thing.
That'd be horrendous.
Oh, no. I kind of want to meet the Shrouded Lady. I want to find out what her deal is. Like, there's something there.
I mean, it would be cool to meet Xanathar. Xanathar would be
at
from a safe distance. I mean, partly just to ask what the goldfish is about.
Yeah.
That's definitely
a
curiosity. He's a big beholder with a pet goldfish in a little... Yeah, I know sort of Xanathar from Xanathar's Guide to Everything.
Yeah, of course.
And I did play in a one shot where we met Xanathar briefly.
Okay.
Or we went to his office. Oh, I can't remember if Xanathar was there or not, but their goldfish was there. I think Xanathar was there. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because I believe these are the original, the names of the characters in Gary Gygax's original campaigns.
You have
so the spell like Melf's Acid Arrow comes from the elf that they had there. And I think back then the race was the class as well.
Oh, right.
So when your character dies, so he started off as elf and then he came back as Felf and Gelf when he died until he got to Melf.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of death.
Yeah, that shows you something about how often characters died in first edition, I guess. It's like, oh, another one's gone. Who else would I want to meet? Jenny?
Jenny, my gosh.
Jenny just like becomes D&D lore. She's actually the big bad of our whole campaign.
She's like the final villain, yeah. She's the final villain. Like, she's been like...
She's
in the prophecy. She's been there the whole time, like, oh, it's all part of my plan. You know, giants from the deep.
I guess the rest of the watch in Tillersham are quite fun. Like, it'd be quite fun to have Sully there and... Esmeralda. Was it Esmeralda? It was Esmeralda, wasn't it?
Mia and...
No. I made that name up?
What was
her
name? Yeah, you've made that up.
What was her name?
Esmeralda doesn't exist. Or we haven't met Esmeralda.
Who was the other watch person?
Izel.
Storin, So characters from the D&D lore or just from our show?
Either. Whichever one you would want there at your dinner party.
Juna, obviously. Juna's great.
We'd all want Juna at the dinner party.
Should we sneak in 20 tied teas under the table?
Yeah.
All right, it's in my pocket.
Yeah, check your larder after she's left.
I'd like to have Tasha round.
From Tasha's Hideous Laughter. Tasha.
Yes. And Tasha's...
Cauldron of Everything.
Cauldron of Everything. I can't wait. I'm going to buy that.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that. Tasha's... Cauldron of Everything. Yeah, that sounds cool.
I'm so excited for the new
book. A powerful mage who thought, you know, I'm gonna make this spell, it's just gonna make you laugh, and then like you're crippled. Like, it's a great idea. What other mischief she has in mind?
I mean, I don't know about you, but I would love to summon Gary Gygax as his DM capacity and just quiz that guy.
Yeah,
I owe him so much.
I would love Brennan Lee Munnigan as well. He runs Dimension 20. He's hilarious. He's just a hilarious role player, like comedic actor. And like his imagination is just like, you can tell his players are throwing the wildest stuff at him. And he's like, okay, cool. That happens. And then he will just like absolutely go for it. And you're like, how did you pull that out of your hat? And then it sticks for the rest of the campaign. Like, he'd be hilarious to have around.
Maybe a little bit of Taco the Wizard.
Taco the Wizard. Yeah, the flip wizard. Yeah.
Oh my god. Abraca, fuck you!
Oh my god.
No, Magic Brian. Magic Brian has to come.
Oh, Magic Brian.
Magic Brian. Oh, I'm going to unlock Seeker inside. Oh, I'm the real one.
I'm Black Spider.
For anybody who hasn't listened to The Adventure Zone, these are characters from The Adventure Zone.
Mm. And they're amazing.
Yeah. I'd have one more. It's a character from another campaign. His name's Andrew Agerfort. Imagine if Dumbledore was black, bold, but batshit crazy.
Wow.
Like in the first episode of Fantasy High, in the first season, he somehow gets through this gateway that one of the characters makes. Goes, oh, I snuck him through your portal to heaven and I'm going to kill God and loads of angels. Don't tell anyone and lock the door when you come out. And he pulls out the craziest stuff. And he's the principal of a adventuring high school. But he's he's literally the apocalypse, but everyone loves him and he's wise and he's fun, but he's always pulling himself. Where you come back? Oh, I was just, you know, eradicating those rebellious elves to the south. I'm like, what? And I just blotted out the sun and it didn't work and I burnt my hands. Oh, never mind. He's insane.
Is this
insane.
Is this another podcast?
It is Dimension 20 again.
This is Dimension. Okay.
Dimension 20. They have different campaigns.
I need to add that to my listening
list. Please do.
Or watching
please
list
do.
If it's YouTube.
It's bonkers, but
it sounds amazing.
So imaginative.
Right up my street.
It's so good.
But wait, you want this guy at your
absolutely.
Dinner?
Absolutely. He has so many stories to tell. How many times have you died? Well, my dear boy, I've probably died about 30 times the last time. My daughter is a phoenix, and I don't know how that... Do you know how that happened? Yes. His daughter is generally... One of his daughters is generally, like, a half phoenix, like, or something. And, like, what? No one questions, like, wait, how did this happen? Why is your daughter a phoenix? So blood, flesh and blood relatives? Yeah, of course, my flesh and blood relatives. I'd want to know how that happened.
How have I not listened to this podcast?
He had a pretty exciting night in an aviary, by the sounds of it.
Probably, yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. I love it. I love that chaos.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you for the plug. I'm going to be downloading that one.
Yeah, do.
Okay, moving on. Next question, people. So this is from Hannah Clancy via Facebook. What is the longest campaign you have ever participated in? So what's your longest running one?
Easy.
Same. It might be the same one.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's the first one that I've ever played that's still ongoing, is our Cavalcade Circus game with...
How long have we been playing that?
We've been playing since, I want to say, April or March last year, April or March 2019.
Yeah. I'd say then, since then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a year and a half.
It was the day... I know I could find out the day... that we first played because it was the day I had just finished performing in a show the day before called Tabby McTat
at
the South Bank Centre.
Yeah.
Because I turned up at the game with a whole load of cat-shaped gingerbread biscuits.
They were great. Yeah.
Because I'd made them for the
I'm
cast.
I'm so sad I missed that one.
But I'd made far too many biscuits.
Yeah.
So the cast had eaten as many as they could. But there's only so many cat-shaped gingerbread biscuits you can eat before you're like, okay,
I'm
done.
That's your baking.
Yeah, that's true.
Man.
We don't get your baking now we play online.
Yeah.
So good.
Sorry.
I think the other campaign that I was a part of that kind of finished actually around the time of lockdown, I think that probably just pips Cavalcade by being, I think, about 2 years. So, yeah. But, yeah. So, but Cavalcade is catching up pretty quick. So.
It will overtake.
Oh, yeah.
Those characters are only level 8 now.
Yeah,
so there's plenty of time still to go.
Yeah.
This is what I'm trying to work out because I think I joined... when you guys had got to level 6.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
But I feel like I've been with you for about a year.
Yeah. It probably has been that long. Because we hadn't played that many sessions.
It was at Grace's place.
Yeah, it was definitely at Grace's,
Obviously, there were more games over the lockdown because we were able to...
Yeah, that's
know,
when we like
were
actually able to get into a regular pattern of it.
Yeah, so. we've probably played more games almost in lockdown
than we have.
Definitely, over the six months than we did in the year before, I reckon.
I think lockdown was either the death or the beginning of many a D&D campaign.
Yeah.
People were... It's like, what else are you going to do? Play D&D.
Yeah. Precisely. When we were in sort of full lockdown, we were playing every week, weren't we, with Cavalcade? It was great.
It was the only way that I knew what day of the week it was. I was like, it must be Wednesday because we're playing D&D.
Yeah.
Goodness me. I'd rush home from so far to get back in time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm coming home from Kent. I'll be there in time. My question, Cavalcade was the longest campaign I've played, And No Small Roles will be second.
No Small Roles will go on for years and years.
I was going to say, it will be this one.
Cool. I think so.
Yeah, there'll be babies born during this campaign.
Is eternal.
They'll take over our characters.
Amazing. Actually, I really like this question. So this is from Pippa Beckford, again via Facebook. And she asks, does knowing that an audience will be listening via podcast affect your D&D experience in any way as you play? And if so, how?
Good question.
Yes, straight away.
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't be as descriptive with what Enkidu is doing. Even when I listen back, I find myself saying a lot, Enkidu does this and Enkidu will do this and do that and do this, rather than just going for it and just acting it out. Because I'm always quite wary of, there's a delay over Zoom. I don't want to talk over someone at the same time. I don't want anything that I say to get lost. So I feel, while I don't feel the sense of immediacy completely dip, I am wiring my brain to go out of the way to be as descriptive and clear as possible so that an audience gets every little thing in there. So yeah, it is affecting my experience a little bit. And also I am playing up especially the backstory. Like, I've never had to do this with any other D&D character I have before, where I've been kind of purposefully, Daryl purposefully being cagey about Nikiti's backstory, so there's something more to listen out for as the episodes go by. So I feel like I am putting on a little bit of a show, but only in that regard. The rest of it is really just play.
Yeah, I think as Daryl says, there is a little bit of awareness, of course, that there is an element of making sure that, as you say, like, stuff is clear. And as I said earlier, picking Artificer was partly a choice based on it being a podcast format and sort of thinking about sort of descriptions and stuff like that. And actually, interestingly, being more descriptive through playing Orin and being an Artificer, like, now going back to my Ranger character in Cavalcades, like, I'm starting trying to be a little bit more descriptive in some of his spells. And sort of how he uses components a little bit more, and just starting to sprinkle a little bit of that in, just to actually feedback the other way. So I completely agree with what Daryl, you just said. But I think, like, what's interesting, what kind of, I think, makes it feel a little bit less performed or less aware of it being for an audience, is because we've been playing over Zoom for a little bit before we started doing a podcast. There's already a little bit of, we've got used to some of those sort of elements that are similar to podcasting. Like, we've all been speaking into microphones and having to be aware of all the kind of, like, not speaking over each other and all of that sort of stuff through playing on Zoom already. So it feels like less of a leap in some senses, I think, to then be like, okay, now we're going to record that as well.
Okay.
I think if we went directly from, like, all being sat around the table and then suddenly the six of us had microphones in our faces, and I think that would feel, for me, then I'd probably be more conscious of it and more like, oh, okay, this is really, really different to our usual stuff. But it felt like a more natural transition, I think.
Yeah, I think for me, because I fell in love with D&D mostly because of podcasts, I've always wanted to do one. And so actually, finally, like, me and David talked about doing a podcast, and it took us probably a year until we actually went, right, we're gonna actually make the podcast. And so for me, it just adds to that excitement, because it's another level and I love playing the game. And it's, from my point of view, all the players are an audience as well. Like, they're an audience to what you're creating with your character. So it just means that our audience is bigger and more people get to get excited about what's going on in our game. I like, don't know if you guys have this, but you're like telling a friend about, like, oh, this happened in my game and this happened. And they're like, cool. With the podcast, you've got your friends coming, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. That's mad. And that's like a whole extra, like, level of enjoyment, which I didn't realize was going to come with it, but it just gets you more, like, hyped for the game, which I love.
Oh, well, definitely. I mean, I was lucky to see Daryl and Ben in the flesh recently, and you definitely get to do that thing where I'm gushing about it, and then you're like, oh, but the next couple of episodes, you just wait, and you've got that whole, like, it's like you've got that secret over me
forever
that I can get excited about and just try and read into, like, ooh, do they mean, does somebody die? Does something crazy happen? Is anybody else going to get punched in the face?
Oh my gosh.
Ready? Are all the housekeepers safe? What's going on?
Nope. Okay. This next, we're going a bit darker here for this next question, which is from John Ellis via Facebook, who asks, how will you each deal with character permadeath if it happens? And they've added the hashtag just for you. There's no coming back.
Oh my gosh. Hello.
Yeah. And then a secondary part to the question on top of that, once you've figured that one out. If a chance presented itself for your character to save the life of another at the cost of your own, who would you let die? And another hashtag, another question about death.
Thanks, John.
Oh. Great. Okay, so two questions from John. Nice.
Great. He wants to go.
I've got backup characters in my head.
Like, I do not.
Because I don't want Gwendolyn to die at all, but she keeps on rushing into the fights. Most of, like, my things that I can do with her are hand-to-hand combat. So I've got to get in the fight. Like, I've got some ranged things. Like, I've got my dagger, I've got my darts, and I've got my spear. But most of it is, like, you know, I get a bonus attack just to use an unarmed strike. So she has to get in there. That's what she's kind of made to do. I'm glad she's a half-orc with her relentless endurance. Wow. That helps a lot.
Oh my gosh, she'd be useful.
I am nervous what her longevity is. So I've got some other characters that I love. I really hope I don't have to use them anytime soon.
Wow, we want Gwen.
I know.
To stay.
I want her to stay alive too. I think she's going to learn a bit of sense, but not much, because that would be fun.
Just get her to use Enkidu as a human shield or something.
I don't think he's got enough hit points.
Enkidu had a little bit of a tidbit when the owlbear fight was happening.
Oh yeah,
Enkidu was rushing to Gwen to jump in front of her. Because
really?
He has, yeah, wow. He has the shield spell. Because in my head, I was planning this whole like chat with Gwen about, look, I'm not going to say it just in case we have an opportunity comes up for us to have this chat. But he was going to like jump in for her and like, because he has the shield spell. So he's a little bit harder to hit sometimes. But I've never used it because like the monster always wants to kill Gwen first because she gets there the quickest and she hits the hardest.
Yeah.
By she's far, fast. By anyone.
She's the big
threat. Now Grace is going to have to pretend that she doesn't know that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, save me somebody.
Oh,
no,
oh, that's really sweet. No, no, I still
Gwen,
don't like
Gwen
Enkidu.
Gwen can like kill anything she wants. Like she's strong enough to do it.
She keeps on getting the final blow. Like everyone's putting some work in and then Gwen gets the final blow. It's just
happens
like,
time
and
time again.
Yeah.
But do you think, would Gwen save somebody else's life at the cost of her own? Because again, spoilers, you know, the stairway incident, it was a case of you would both die.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it was
if it's a case
save
of
yourself, but
they're both going to die, then of course she's going to try and get out. Like, you know, if she can't save her companion, then she won't. But I'm pretty sure she'd put her life on the line for Juna.
No.
I think Juna's been a big part of her life. She's been another, a mother type figure of a couple of mother figures in her life. And she couldn't not put herself in the way of saving Juna, I think.
Mm.
But nobody else. Everybody else dies.
Not that fond of the rest of them.
I know.
Not that fussed about them.
I think she's still getting to know them all. I think absolutely she'd try and save everyone. Mm. Or whether she'd fully lay down her life for all of them yet, I'm not sure. Like, it really, I think there's potential for that to happen, but like she still doesn't really know Orin so well. Obviously there's the friction with Enkidu. Guy, I think she'd be pretty close to putting her life on the line for him. Oh. But
the guy who sits at the back of the fight.
I mean, she wouldn't really need to put her life on the line for him because he's
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty clear as well, Gwendolyn likes bards.
That's true.
She does like
bards.
So
maybe
there's
something
true.
Talent. She likes, which is something I do have in common with Gwendolyn, is I am attracted to talent, and
so
is Gwendolyn.
Okay. I love that little tidbit when I re-listen to the episodes when Gwen and Juno having that chat about when you ran up with the bard. I'm like, this is hilarious. I love that Gwendolyn has a type.
Yeah.
And they've both shown up at a similar time. Oh my gosh.
She's ran off one bard, that one's buggered off, and then she met another bard. She's like, okay, I'll follow you.
Cool, let's steal a horse and like,
she sees Izelle in the bar. The first thing she does is like, hi, you play instruments. That's cool.
Swoon. Amazing.
Yeah.
So good.
Anybody who plays an instrument, Gwendolyn's just like,
you are not safe.
She's there.
How about with Orin then? Especially hearing that Gwendolyn would just let you die.
I know. So in a great way. Like, I mean, I was going to say that I'd save Gwendolyn, but nope.
Oh my gosh.
That's last time I ever heal Gwendolyn.
Oh, I love the beat. Like, you know, saving somebody and like dying for them is different, guys.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But that's a whole spell slot. Like, in terms of what would I do if Orin died, I don't know. I'd be very, very sad. And I might come back with an artificer called Lauren.
Lauren, yeah.
I don't know. Lauren, I have no backup character yet. I probably should think of a backup character in case. I think I'd want to come up with something new. I wouldn't want to revisit something that I played before, so I'd probably end up playing a class or something that I've never played before. Mm-hmm. Cleric, maybe. Never played a cleric, yeah.
You could play as Orin's being propped up by his bees. I mean, this is dark. This is really dark.
Okay.
The idea that the bees are like running
Orin.
Yeah, he downloaded himself to his bees or somehow, or his soul transferred into the little dragon. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's options. There's options there. Like, when he gets more powerful, it's totally options.
I thought you said you were coming back as a squirrel.
Yes, so that is the other option, is that I come back as a squirrel, as I said, in episode 11.
Ooh.
I do also have, like, I would love to play a Vicar of Dibley cleric. Like, I do just at some point in a game want to play a Vicar of Dibley cleric, so that might be the backup character.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah. Just Dawn French as a D&D character.
I run a small wild man campaign, and one of the players plays a Leonin cleric, and they're very pious, as like a cleric of Pelor repents, and oh, he sees profanities in my presence, and they are absolutely hilarious. I can't even, like, it's one of those, oh, you have to be there to get the joke kind of things, but she's absolutely hilarious as this pious giant lion with clerical robes in the middle of a war, just like, no profanities around me. You having sex with the nurse? No, please close the curtain. love it. That'd be great, Ben. Like, yeah.
So there we go. That's the backup character sorted.
Oh, man.
Vicar of Dibley.
Geraldine Granger.
With spells. I love it.
Yeah, Victoria Wood is a nun. Like,
Oh, I mean, I adore Victoria Wood so much.
Yeah.
Victoria Wood's a whole other Keller.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she is, yeah.
But I would happily come back as a Victoria Wood character equally.
That would be great. Yeah.
And in terms of who I would I save someone at the cost of my own life? I feel like we might all give the same answer, but I think I'd save Juna.
I think Juna is like the center of us all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the glue.
Mm. I'd give a different answer though.
Oh, really?
I would.
I just, like, in episode 8, the stairwell incident, not to get too spoilery in case, why are you still listening to this if you haven't listened to episode 8?
Spoilers.
Stop listening.
Orin has so many regrets over the stairwell moment. I'm going to say that for basically going down and getting Guy first.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Like, I thought I did hear that in your voice, actually. Yeah. When you did the dice roll, it's like, I'm saving Guy. It was very matter of fact. Yeah. It wasn't.
Well, and okay, Chris, don't listen to this. I mean, I love Chris to bits. So this is nothing about Chris. This is purely about the characters, just to be hyper clear here. But basically, just to get technical on this for a moment, I think this is metagaming, I'm sure. If he'd gone down and got Juna first, I think he could have saved Juna.
Ah.
So I think whatever he did to try and save Gaius was never going to work.
No.
But I think if he'd got Juna first, he could have saved Juna.
I regret just like not asking what Gaius's role was like when he was running up the stairs. Like I could have, but then would that have, that was me making a decision as the character.
Yeah.
Like, because I dragged him down when he had a 19. Yeah. He could have got up.
Yeah, he could have got up. Yeah.
Like he could have been out of there.
Yeah.
But like,
so Grace the player is just like, oh fuck, but then I made a choice that I made the character's choice, not
and that's kind of why I rolled the dice, because I was aware that like the only chance of saving Guy was to go down for him first, and then potentially there was a chance that I think he could have been saved, and actually going for Juna second I think was more likely that she was going to be okay. I think she had rolled one less death save or passed one, or I can't remember quite the ins and outs of it, but I definitely could have saved Juna if I got Juna first, beezed her or like stabilized her or whatever, and then tried to get Guy, which may or may not have worked, probably wouldn't have worked. So I think Orin is,
what if you got to the end of the episode then and David was like, well, they're pretty much all alive, I won't do the whole table thing,
it's just Guy who's died, or it's just Juna who's died, it's fine. I think the table was gonna happen.
I think it was like listening back to it when he goes, and what do you set it for? Oh, 24 hours. I'm just going to make a note of that.
Yeah.
Which,
hindsight is 2020. Yeah. Like listening back, that's the interesting thing about like having a podcast and having it all recorded and then going back and listening to it all. Listening now to David, where like me and Vicky, aka Juna and Orin, but me and Vicky have got completely the wrong end of the stick about what is going on with the table.
Yeah.
And like everything that David is saying is like, I look out the window, it looks exactly the same. We're like, everything, we're taking everything. It's confirmation bias in action in its sort of purest form, that like we are taking everything. And then I think Vicky says, is this how you expected us to react? And David's like, not really. David's clearly sitting there being like, okay.
Yeah.
What are you two
It was
thinking?
Honestly such a joy to listen to that whole segment.
I love that.
I was wet with tears.
But like we had no idea that whole 24 hours thing was coming back. Like one of our questioners, Darkest Argentum, tweeted us and said, I felt like I knew that was going to happen. And I'm just like, I had no idea. I'm really interested to like which listeners like thought that was happening, which had no idea, just like us. Or it's interesting. But if you're listening to, when you're listening back to it, you have such a different perspective than what you do when you're in the game.
Yeah.
There's some like you listen to things, you're like, oh, that was so glaringly obvious. But then in the game, you don't notice it.
You say that, I didn't pick up.
Not that in particular. No. There's like some things in game that I'm like, oh, I should have put that together sooner. But like, I didn't get the time thing at all. I had no idea that was coming. No.
I was trying to puzzle that for it because I think Oren tried after they got it to work. He tried it again.
Yeah,
and then David said, you get the impression that it's worked. Yeah. And that's when it was like, oh, we're in tomorrow. And I was like, no, something's missing. They've either not done something or there's something missing. But then everything got crazy after that and I forgot to like try and puzzle it out.
It was the Lady Vondel falling over. Yeah. I was like, okay, so it's just her. And, you know, that made complete sense to me. So, you know, that whole thing in episode 8 when it blew my mind. I was so happy as well. They could continue.
I mean, we were
so stressful,
so relieved slash furious.
Like, oh, this is stupid. But oh man,
it was stressful. I think it was Daryl, you saying as Enkidu, it's like, oh, I'm gonna walk off into the forest and I'll just look for a place. To bury. God.
Yeah. Like Enkidu was like trying to bury them, and Gwen and Orion were like, no, we're not doing it.
We're just holding on to the dead bodies, like we're going to be okay.
Enkidu's like, he's going to start smelling like, in about 3 hours. He's going to put him down. But also,
in the episode afterwards is when Orin's back with Juna, and she goes, oh, I'm a bit lost. And he's like, the thing is, you're not lost. And every time I hear it, just gets me. And I'm just like, Oren, baby, Oren.
Oren, Oren.
He's got dick everywhere, but it's okay.
Oh, there's vomit all over the floor.
I'll just wipe it up with a bit of bread.
Sorry, we've gone completely off track.
Yeah, question.
No, I love this. It's all really tender, but we do need to know Daryl whether you'd let everyone die or not.
Whether I'd let everyone die. It would depend on the circumstances. Like, how are we getting killed? Is it like some, I don't know. would I let everyone die?
At the expense of your life.
And we're talking permadeath here. It's not just unconscious or, you know, revivify spell or anything like that, which is something that these listeners, if they've not played it before, will probably get to at some point. But the idea that you can bring somebody back from the brink of death, this is perma. So no coming back. Would Enkidu be that kind of character that would potentially sacrifice themselves to save their friend?
This is the thing. Enkidu's walking around with this mission in his head. No matter what, you yourself cannot die. You can't. Do not put yourself in that situation. You can't die. It's your mission is too important. But I think he would leap over fire to save Oren. He would throw it down. He'd apologize to whoever he had to let down to swap for Oren's life. And I think it would be Oren he'd risk himself for. It's just too much of Oren inside Enkidu and so many others that he's known before for him to like, no, I'm not another one. No, I've got to save this one.
Oh, man.
Got to save this one.
Oh, that's
feel really bad I picked Juna now.
That is so super tender because Enkidu's like, oh, lay down my life. But Oren pops up. He's like, oh, so
how did you come to that decision? I rolled a dice, didn't it?
Yeah, rolled a dice.
Rolled a d6.
It's quite logical.
Yeah, that's true. I thought of it that way. It's very Oren, actually. It's very Oren. Yeah. Most logical situation, That's what I did.
Yeah. I think you'd pick Oren for the sake of, like, yeah, Oren's clever. You know, he can get himself to a good future. Like, yeah. So save Oren.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, this is super deep. So I think we've probably got time for maybe one more question. So let's pick it up a little bit. This
sure.
is a really nice question from The Final George. Via
good,
Instagram.
Good name for The Final George.
The Final George.
Yeah, I know, right?
Perfect.
Thank you, The Final George, for supplying us with this one, which is a brilliant question, by the way. If you could have access to a cantrip in real life, just one, what would it be and why? You can only cast it once per hour. It's very specific. Once per hour. So you can't just like spam guidance or anything like that.
Ah, damn it.
Which cantrip would you choose? Grace, take us away. What would you choose and why?
For my everyday life, I think it would be super useful to have mending. I do a lot of sewing. I do costume. I like craft. And all that sort of thing. Like, you know, I like to get into something and work out how it works. So to be able to mend things just like that, that would make my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, it's like you drop a cup of tea on the floor.
Oh, no.
That was my favourite mug. Yeah.
Bloop, and to be fair, I am such a klutz. That would really help. Just like I've completely fucked up the editing. Oh, I just mend it all.
Now, there you go. Mending would be so useful
so
for the
useful.
Edits.
Throw your, like, if you. Actually had to throw my computer in frustration, which we get tempted to do, mend that.
Yeah.
I think it's something like magic can't restore, mending can't restore magic to an item.
I think
though.
So, yeah.
Technology's computer's different to magic.
Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, technology is different. Yeah.
Okay, that's a really practical one. I like that one.
I like to be practical.
How about you, Ben? What would you choose?
I mean, I'm tempted to say prestidigitation.
I thought you'd say that.
Partly because I learned how to say it. I spent the first 6 months I was playing D&D not knowing how to say that word. So partly because now I've learned how to say it, I feel like that's a useful thing. But I think it's just that sort of utility nature of it as a kind of a catch-all spell that can kind of... I've just opened up D&D Beyond, so I can see what it does.
Well, it's like, you could just like, anytime you enter a room, shower of sparkles.
Yeah, shower of sparkles on entry to a room, little illusory images, and you can it can affect taste and
also,
stuff, can't it? Can it? Or can it not?
Yeah.
That's so good.
Is this the one that automatically cleans something?
Yes.
So Grace dropped her tea on you.
Yeah, you can just be like, clean that up.
Fix the mug and then you would...
Like, and I do spill a lot of stuff. This is true. And like, when I'm cooking or doing anything like that, like if I'm ever cooking and wearing like a white t-shirt, I'm like, nope, this is not going to end well, is it? Like, go and put a jumper on, Ben, because I just know what will end up happening. So that would be incredibly useful. And like being able to make like a little illusionary image in your hand, mainly just so I could pretend I was in like Star Wars and like, you know, they like pop up like little spaceships in their hand with little like 3D renders of stuff. Brilliant. That would just be brilliantly useful. So that's mine.
Ah, that's good. Oh, many would have been mine as well. It's just so handy.
It's out of touch. A good one.
It's fixed. I don't sew, but I can stitch whenever I get rips in like jackets and stuff. I'm like, she'll say stitch in time saves 9, but it takes ages to stitch this patch. You know, it would save a lot of time. Prestidigitation is good. But I think, mage hand. Yeah. I think mage hand, I mean, it can't carry that much. It can't, like, it's only like 5 pounds, which is what? Box of cereal.
Yeah, a couple of bags of sugar.
You know,
or something.
A couple of bags of sugar, you know.
Oh, but it can't even carry your shopping for you.
But if it's an extra hand,
depends how much
you
buy.
Know what I mean? Like floating around, like that is so handy.
But I suppose the thing is you could have both arms laden by your shopping and still
okay. Exactly.
That's true. Just scan your Nectar card or whatever with your mage hand.
Yeah.
Like
while you're socially distanced stuff as well. Like, oh, I'm just like, what's that sound of just
well, that's true. But also, you wouldn't have to touch anything then with your hand. So
you'd never have to
clean your hands.
No.
Like, if you're like, well, don't want to touch the doorknob.
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
Yeah.
I work in a school. Like, I can write on a whiteboard from the back of the classroom. Okay, kids.
Yeah.
So today. an extra hand would be awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
I really like that. These are good choices, guys. I was thinking something along the lines of like, oh, control flames so that I can put
what
out
do you think
fires
about
or make Eldritch the fire
Blast
brighter.
I thought, I'd probably get arrested after an hour. Pew pew in the traffic and like, no.
Yeah, Eldritch Blast is wonderful, but you know, it's not the most practical.
No, at all.
It's not an everyday cantrip, is it?
No. You don't want to Eldritch Blast in your flat,
thinking,
do you? Like,
no,
it's just getting
Friends would be quite an interesting one, actually, thinking about it, because you could just, like, people would know that
that's
you've
the thing
done
with friends,
it, and you're just
it?
Like, oh, you know, you can.
Like, after the minute, is it a minute that it's that
it's
lasts?
Long,
and then they know, and they turn against you, don't they?
normally.
Yeah, which understandably, you've just Jedi mind tricked me. Like,
oh, amazing. Well, thanks very much, guys. There are a couple more questions, but I am going to save them for the other three when I get a chance to chat to David and to Vicky and to Chris. Might ask a couple of these crossover questions because your answers have been brilliant.
Yeah, I want to hear what their answers are to some of these questions.
We all need to know who they'd save.
I know, right? Without listening to ours first.
Yeah, so they're not allowed to hear this.
That'd be nice, yeah.
But thank you so much for giving me your time to ask you these questions. So that's thanks to Grace and to Ben and to Daryl. Thank you so much for giving our listeners just a little bit more info about yourselves and how you approach life as if it's D&D.
Well, thank you very much, Sam. I look forward to hearing what the others answer to all these questions. Obviously, a few extra questions that we didn't get to ask today and some extra questions that were asked especially for David because he's special.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget to subscribe to No Small Roles and rate us and review us on iTunes. It really helps us to keep spreading the No Small Roles love, and we love it. So thank you all for listening to No Small Questions, and everybody together, do you know what we're going to say?
Anon!
Anon!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.